Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of the Encevides podcast. This is the show where we talk about doing great things, imaginative things, creative things, and doing those things well with others. We have something really special for you today. One of the guys from the band England in 1819 is here talking to us about the band's music, about their new album. If you don't know the band, England in 1819 is one of the most distinguished bands, one of the most interesting bands, in my opinion, in Louisiana. This year, they made their first ever appearance at the reputable film and music festival, South by Southwest. They are also touring the country this year, and they have a new album on its way. I'm such a fan of their music that I'm going to do something I have never done before. I am going to skip the intro jingle to the Encevides podcast. Now, you might miss it. You might be a little sad. Our jingle, it's okay. It's not bad. But I think you're going to be grateful once you hear the music. The music is definitely a step up from our jingle. So you'll get to hear a little bit of one of the songs from the new album. And if you stick around all the way to the end, you will get to hear an entire song. Gotta wait to the end to hear that, but you will get a little taste right here at the beginning. All right, without further ado, this is the song Himmel from England in 1819's new album, Fireball Electric Tomorrow. Welcome to the show, Andrew Calloway.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
All right. So you all have a very distinct sound, and I thought of some ways to describe it, but you're probably better at describing it than I am. So how would you describe the band sound?
We have come up with our own genre, which is grand wave. I hope that kind of becomes a good description for us. I think that's kind of a way to say it really quickly and kind of clearly. I think it's kind of electronic with the kind of swells that we got from our post-rock phase. So it's kind of like emotional electronic indie rock is what I would say.
Okay, but not post-rock.
No, not post-rock. I think we kind of used to be post-rock back when we had there's kind of been a lot of different lineups for the band, but when we had when it was eight people and we had the big heavy guitar and two drummers and it was kind of this big sound, I'd say we were kind of in a real post-rock area then. But now we're just down to the two people and we use a lot of electronics and we don't have a guitar at all.
All right, good to know, because I'm the guy that usually gets the terms wrong. So what's the term again?
I call it grand wave.
Grand wave.
Which is, as far as I know, is not a genre, but it kind of is a playoff of like chill wave and kind of incorporating like the swells and the epicness that we kind of go for.
Yeah, I like it. We'll see if we can get that to become a thing.
Yeah.
All right. So am I correct in concluding that the band is named after the poem by Percy Shelley?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, because otherwise it could have just been one of those coincidences, right?
No. Yeah.
Well, he has a poem named that, but we have nothing to do with it.
No, yeah, we took it straight from that name.
All right, well, I have to ask you, as an enthusiast of the poet Percy Shelley,
okay,
do you have any predictions, any sense of where another item named after Percy Shelley is going? And I'm specifically making reference to Ozymandias, the upcoming Breaking Bad episode. What are your thoughts?
I don't know, but...
You've got nothing. All right. You know, forget it. This interview is over. That was really why I wanted to talk to you to get insights.
Brother started watching Breaking Bad. I think he's like halfway through it.
All right. Well, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, but only because I like your music. But anyway, you all are a family of musicians. So how does that work? How do you all collaborate together?
Well, it's actually just me and my brother now. This is kind of a recent change that we haven't totally announced it, but this latest album was just me and Dan.
Okay.
My dad still collaborated on the album with us. You know, it's just the touring lifestyle is not really, you know, working for him, I think. As far as the collaboration, we really just sit around and make noise until we kind of lock onto something that we like. And I think me and my dad are more willing to just kind of sit there and let things happen. Dan usually likes to come in when things have kind of solidified a little bit. He's more of a classical musician, I think, that way. You know, he likes to come in a little bit later in the process. Sometimes it's me and Dan, or sometimes Dan and my dad, and, you know, we'll just sit and we'll just make noise until we like something. And then once we get a kind of idea, then it becomes a lot of arguing and everyone kind of trying to shape it in different ways. But it usually ends up kind of equally shaped by the three of us.
Yeah. And you all seem to have a good relationship from what I see.
Definitely. We definitely do.
I imagine you'd have to with all the amount of time that you spend. From what I've been able to find, you do the vocals and the drum machine and the piano, depending on the song, and yeah. Dan does French horn, organ. Is that right? Do you all ever switch it up?
Well, our setup is really interesting right now, actually. It's just three keyboards and the bass guitar and then me singing. That's it. That's all we have. So it's pretty much set up like a synth, a piano, and a bass synth. And then, so Dan's kind of bouncing back and forth between the bass and the bass synth and the piano, and I'm playing piano and synth mainly. So Dan is a little bit, well, and he does the French horn, I guess. So he's kind of taking control of like the bass area, and I'm doing like the piano and the synth and singing.
Yeah, that sounds like quite the mix there.
Yeah.
So thematically, it seems like you all hit upon transitions in life, right? Like the crossroads, the intersection between life and death. Would you say that's the case, or that's just what I'm seeing?
No, I think you're right. I think most of our lyrics are, yeah, about transitions. They definitely are about larger arcs of time than, like, you know, these kind of like expansive thoughts or like reflecting on life and death and that type of thing.
Right. And it almost has an epic quality to it.
Yeah.
And another thing that I really appreciate about you all is that you all have a unity in your music and visuals, right? You go to some shows and it just seems like, yeah, let's get some lights and make them look kind of cool. But it seems like there's some kind of cohesiveness.
Yeah.
In the show part, in the visual part, mm-hmm. and in the music. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you would talk about that a little bit.
I kind of think of the lights as just another instrument for us because they're so much more than lights. You know, there's colors that we can do and the lasers come out and there's like these beams and things can like spin or things can go up and down. I mean, there's so many options that what it becomes is like another part that we have to write for the song. So once we have the song, then we have to do this other step, which is, okay, now let's write the light part. And so we kind of have to like design, well, this part's kind of still and, you know, this part should kind of grow. And so it really is like someone else is playing another instrument because it goes along to the song, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I definitely felt that way. I want to talk to you about the two different shows of yours that I saw recently, and then we'll talk about the upcoming album.
Okay.
But I had heard you all before, but the first show that I got to see you all at was the one you all did to kick off your South by Southwest tour.
Right.
And
That was Northgate Fest?
That was at Mud and Water.
Okay.
Right before you all left for South by Southwest.
Okay.
You know, it's an interesting story. That was actually my first visit to South by Southwest as well. And I was trying to get a carpool together, and I had actually talked to Liam about it. Liam, your dad, who was at the show, and he recommended that I try to get a ride with a fan of yours named Brittany, but that didn't work out. Anyway, I still went out. It was an interesting experience. But when I was at your show at Mud and Water, it had this calming sense, right? It felt like everything's going to be okay. And so do you all ever think about the effect that the music has on people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think for me, that's what I write the lyrics kind of based on. I want the music to have the effect on people that it has on me when I sit and play it. You know, if I'm sitting at the piano and playing and singing this song, and it's making me feel a certain way, you know, I want other people to feel that way too.
How would you put that to words? What sort of feeling or impact do you want to have on people when they hear you at a show?
Well, it depends on the song, I guess. Oh, that's hard. That's a tough question. But I think if I had to like sum up what our impact would be, and I don't know if anyone's ever felt this way from the show, because I think that a lot of the lyrical things and a lot of like what I'm actually feeling, I'm not sure people are totally grasping that. You know, maybe they are, but I think just like you're saying, really, I mean, maybe that makes me think that people are getting it, like a sense of calmness, you know, with life, a sense that, man, I don't know how, if I could say it, like, I think to realize what's important and what's not important. A big thing for me is people being happy and people finding happiness within themselves, not looking out into the world for that, you know, or looking out to people or a band or anything, you know, just for people to have that sense of calmness and happiness, for everyone to kind of find it within themselves, how to feel that way.
And I think that does come across. And what a great message to put out there. I mean, getting caught up in the band scene, sometimes it's almost like that can be the last thing that people are thinking about, right? When it's for some people about, hey, you know, who's this big band and what's going on? And it's nice to have that very grounded message to be a big part of the music. So talk more about South by Southwest. How was that going, performing there and meeting some of the bands out there?
That was great. I mean, we got a really good view of South by Southwest in just the 2 days we were there. We played three shows, and it was like the three shows were so different. We played one, which was like the official showcase show, which was very like, felt very like corporate. And they just kind of threw us up there and, you know, play 20 minutes and get off. And it's just kind of like cycling bands through there. And then we kind of played a middle of the road showcase, which was for the Mellow Mushroom, which was really cool. People that we knew, you know, but there was a lot of bands. That was great. That was probably the best show.
Yeah, that sounds like that would be a great venue. I haven't been to the one out in Austin, but I have been to the one out here, and it does seem to fit the name, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. That was a lot of fun. And then the last show we did was like kind of out of town, and it was this art space, art place thing, and it was just kind of all of our friends' bands. And it was the least people of any show, but it was just so laid back and so much fun. And everybody was, you know, it was just like kegs, and it was just super kind of laid back show. And the people who had been there, I guess people who had been to South by Southwest before, were saying that that's kind of how South by Southwest started. It used to just be, that was all it was, you know, these showcases that were kind of put together by people who just kind of wanted to have shows with their friends and get the people that they knew together and just kind of have a good time.
Right. The people who really love the music as opposed to loving the scene and all that comes with it.
Yeah.
Do you all find that the size of the crowd affects the show or the energy level of the audience?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think I try not to let it affect me too much, you know, because I want to give the same show to if there's five people standing there or if there's 500, you know. But if they're kind of right there with you and they're just jumping up and down and they're just having fun and they're like really into the music, I mean, it's crazy the energy that you get from that, you know, because it's just kind of like a bunch of people cheering you on, you know.
As opposed to being half-hearted and sitting back and trying to watch the game or something.
You just feel like you're not connecting with people, you know. You just feel like you're up there talking and no one's listening, you know. It's weird. It's very kind of like, it's a strange feeling too. But we try to kind of put on the show for whoever, but it is always nice when you get a great crowd, you know.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I'm not the best at meeting people at the meet and greet events, right? Sometimes those things are a little overwhelming where people hand me their business cards and it's like, oh, just please give me some distance. And you all as a band probably have to do that way more often. You're probably experts at it. So what's a good way to mesh with a lot of different people that come up to you that maybe want things or ask things from you? How do you guys work with that?
I think a little bit of alcohol helps.
that seems to help. I mean, in many cases,
you know, it's just makes everything a lot smoother for sure. And I guess, like you're saying, the more you do it, you know, the better you get at it. I'm really not that much of an extrovert, you know, so that's always like the weird time of the night for me when it's time to like socialize and meet the people and do that type of thing. But I am so much better at it now than I used to be, just from doing it a lot and just from meeting a lot of different people, you know.
What's a good way for a fan, a music person to come up and approach you and engage you after a show?
We're usually very willing to talk to anybody. I guess I'd be more willing to talk to somebody if they were saying things that let me know that they were paying attention, you know what I mean? And that they got something out of it. You know, that's kind of what I like to hear, you know?
So something specific, that swell on your second song, as opposed to, you guys are great.
Right, exactly, yeah. If they have some specific thing, then I'm like, whoa, this really affected this person. This is great, you know?
Uh-huh.
It makes the connection seem more real, like it was there, you know?
There was a phrase that I took note of in the Dig article, the Dig Baton Rouge write-up about your South by Southwest trip that described your van of grievances. And I thought that was great. So it sounds like y'all try to be positive about things, and then if there is an issue, you'll address it amongst yourself in the van.
Yeah, we kind of had to make that rule because I don't know what happened, you know, once or twice, something where somebody said something and somebody overheard it, you know. Without getting too much into, like, the business side of it, you know, we kind of feel like the performance starts from the time you walk in, you know.
Sure.
It's not just when you're on stage. I think there's bands that take that approach, and then that's when you're, like, being a dick backstage or whatever, you know. I think we go in there like when we pull up, really, is when we're like, okay, now we're in like performance mode. So we just become the band, you know, that we want to be.
And that's really smart, because it's true that when you're buying into a band or any creative person, I think, it's not just what their work is, but what's it like working with them, interacting with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be the band that people say, oh, these guys are jerks.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are some things that people can do that make things harder for you all at a show? You don't have to badmouth people, but what are some general things that people might do? And it might be without even realizing it.
Like fans?
Or fans or the venue host or anything that might get in the way of you all giving a great performance, so that people can know and so that they would not do those things, so that you all could have an even better performance.
Well, I think from a venue's point of view, I mean, just organization is key. You know, that makes things really smooth. So, like, And that includes, I guess, the venue, the sound guy, the bartender, you know, if they all kind of know what's going on when we show up, that makes things really easy. It's the worst.
When they're like, blimey, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah. Who are you guys? I don't know when you start. I don't know when the sound guy's coming. I don't know where to put your stuff. I don't know where you should park. Like, you know, then it's like, man, we just got to figure all this stuff out. If they're kind of like, okay, here's the deal. Boom, boom, boom. And a lot of times, I mean, the really great venues will email that to you. You know, you get like a list and here's your, you know, schedule for the night, basically, like be here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. And as far as fans, what can fans do better?
I mean, I don't imagine you all get a lot of hecklers or people who are just hostile.
So, yeah, but if you are heckling, that's definitely not.
Yeah, not so cool. Not so cool, yeah. Guys.
Yeah, I think for us, I think maybe there's not a great way to say this, but especially for a smaller band like us, what happens is like basically the 10 or 15 minutes after we play is where we'll sell shirts and CDs and everything like that. And so that's kind of like crunch time, because really, I mean, the merchandise, the t-shirts and the CDs and the posters and all that, that's really where we make our money, just because we're so small. We're not playing for large amounts of money from the door or anything, you know? So that's kind of like the hectic time. I think sometimes like, people who like other bands or people who like, it'll be like a music, recording guy or something. He'll want to talk to us right after.
So it's like, buddy, give us like 10, 15 minutes.
Right. The last thing I want to do is be having a 10-minute conversation about someone else's band when I've got like 10 people in line.
Right. It's like, you guys sound like, have you ever heard of the band Sigur Rós, guys?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't want to sound like an asshole, but I think that it really like that makes or breaks a night for us. You know, it's crazy how much of a difference selling a few t-shirts makes for us when we're on tour, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize the costs involved for many creative ventures. It's not about selling just to sell. I mean, that's important, but sometimes it's like, look, we're just trying to at least recover our costs.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I remember our first tour, we lost some amount of money. I don't remember what it was. It was a lot, though. And so I did this whole new budget thing. I was like, we can't stay in motels anymore. We gotta, you know, this is our amount of money for food and everything. And we went back on the road for another month tour, and we broke even, and we had like a party. I mean, we were so happy to just not make any money, you know. It was crazy. There's a lot of bands that are just trying to break even because everything just adds up, you know.
All right, so I want to talk about your other recent screening that I got to attend, and that would be the live music that you all did for Nosferatu for Baton Rouge Gallery's Music and Movies on the Lawn.
Right.
And what an experience that was. I've seen that film a few times. Your version was the most unsettling.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you'd want that for Nosferatu. It's not exactly like, let's go sing in the forest with everyone and dance. So very different feel from the show I saw at Mud and Water. And I think that speaks to your range,
mm-hmm.
that you can pull both of those off so well.
Yeah.
Talk about creating the music for that. How did that come about?
Well, I pretty much just wrote that music, you know. I used one song from the album where it kind of fit. I tried to put more in there, but it really, none of our music was dark enough for it, you know. So I just sat down with the movie. Nosferatu is public domain, I found out. So it's all over YouTube. So I just downloaded a copy from YouTube, and I would just watch the movie. I watched it a few times and made some rough notes, and then I just started tracking out the song. So I basically had an hour and 20-minute, you know, song that I could click on any point in the song and see what was going on there. So I just started inserting a sound here, you know, a sound there. I knew, you know, okay, here I need like 3 minutes of sad music. Here I need 4 minutes of building scary music, that type of thing. And I just started writing. I wrote a lot on the piano, and I wrote a lot with the computer, and I just kind of kept putting stuff in there until it kind of filled out.
Yeah, and I could tell that you had a sense of the film, that you were familiar with it. There were times where you're basically making a choice about what moment is creepier than the other. And it just felt so right. There was one time in particular where Thomas, the main character who's going out to Nosferatu's castle, and there's a moment where the Count looks at him as if he would make for a good prey. And then there's a moment where Thomas shows him his wife. And you all made that a creepier moment. And I think that was right, because it was a little creepier that he's so willing to show this stranger almost to help the business deal, right?
Right.
So, again, great job you all did. Really unsettling. It brought out new textures in that film that I hadn't discovered before.
Yeah, that's cool. I purposely didn't watch it with the score that was there. So, because I didn't want any kind of like preconceived thing in my head as far as what the scary parts were. So I just watched it totally in silence and then kind of formed my own shape to it.
Is your creative process a little different when you're going for a creepy, unsettling feel, or very similar to the calm kind of creating for the album?
It's a similar process, just with a different thing in mind. I think, it's the same thing that I'll kind of just make sounds until I hear what sounds like the feeling that I'm feeling, you know? But with this, I haven't tried to make that creepy of a sound in a really long time. So it was kind of cool for me, because I'm not usually thinking like creepy, scary as I like make noise. So that was a really kind of a new thing for me. But the process is the same. I mean, it's just a different emotion that I'm focusing on in my mind.
So did you walk through the cemeteries late at night or anything like that?
No, I just sat there and watched the movie. But I did kind of start scaring myself a little bit just watching it in silence, you know?
It is an unsettling film.
It is.
That one has this stillness to it, and it's not just shock. And there's something really creepy about it, and it plays on the imagination. It's just one of those pieces. So I thought the score you all did was worthy of it. And again, I think congratulations are in order for that.
Thanks.
All right, so let's talk about the album now, the Fireball Electric Tomorrow album that you all are just coming out with. That album releases when?
The 24th.
The 24th of September. Yeah, and I've really enjoyed listening to it. Thanks for letting me get the preview. It's been terrific. I went running while I was listening to it. I've used it while I was writing, and it just has that distinct feel to it. And it strikes me as being a little more hopeful than, say, your prior album, Alma.
Yeah, it is definitely more hopeful, yeah.
And again, it's got that sense of transition, that the references to the crossroads, to life and death scenarios, with even more atmospheric swells. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those experiences that is hard for me to articulate it, because it has that kind of impact. Were there ideas or goals that you had for this particular album that were a little different than what came before it?
I think we were, or I definitely was, in a different mental place when I wrote this album. When we wrote the last album, it was a lot darker, a lot more kind of slow, grindy, like really churning through emotions. And this is more of a energetic, hopeful, things feel a lot lighter, you know? Yeah.
So what would you want people to take away from it? They hear the album, you know, hopefully they get to experience it a little bit more than just having it in the background, because it does seem to have that deliberate texture to it.
Yeah. That's a good question. Well, Dan wrote most of the lyrics for this album, which is kind of a new a new thing for us, because on the other two albums, I had written all the music and all the lyrics, basically. So this was very divided. So he might be able to speak more about what exactly lyrically he wants people to take away. But I would say, just for the music, I think I got much more focused on texture for this album, and more into the sound of a whole song instead of the sound of one particular part. You know, I think Alma was really, it kind of jumped around and it kind of had all these different sections. This is more these, we kind of try to create little worlds, like each song has its own little world that where everything kind of happens, and we kind of were really just focusing on the different sounds and the different textures that would happen in that world.
Well, I was curious, the last song on the album is called Rouge, and I wasn't sure if that was a reference to Baton Rouge or just your affinity for the term, the French word for red, right?
I think it did come from Baton Rouge. All the songs had these really weird names that I gave all the songs like names just off the top of my head, and I don't remember, like, a lot of them, well, some of them we ended up changing the names, but Rouge was one of the ones that I just wrote it right away, and I think it did come from Baton Rouge.
So there we go. If nothing else, it gives you an impactful name to close out the album.
That's true.
I don't know about you, but when I go to shows or hear music, sometimes it's like, this is the time of the day where there is the most vitality and creativity, right? Sometimes the day with the job or whatever other minutia come up, it can feel like a routine, and then going to a show or hearing a song can be like, yes, there is life there. There is something vibrant there. This gives me hope. This is exciting. So talk about that. Talk about how that can be a little breath of fresh air into someone's life, and mm-hmm. if you feel any responsibility to make that impact.
I think, yeah, I mean, you're right, 100% right. Definitely, like, the fresh air, it's like life, you know. I think touring shows you that in a really clear way, because you go from city to city, and it's like, even though you're there on a Wednesday and then you're there on a Thursday, like, the people who are coming out to that show, it's like their Friday, you know. They're making it their night to do this, like, fun thing. And so you're just always in that mindset of, like, this is, like, the time where things happen. You know, it's like everyone's just getting, they're just going through their day and kind of getting through it. That's what it feels like, you know.
Right.
It's like the world is gone for a little bit, you know, and people are out, and it's just so social. That's what I love about it, you know, especially in this, like, digital age, you know, to just be at a show and just be surrounded by people and, you know, stories and life is just really, for me, really refreshing. And it's amazing to do that every night. That's what I love about touring. Just to have that happen every single night is just, it's like nothing else.
All right. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for taking time to share your thoughts. I really think big things are happening for you all.
Sure.
Best of wishes for the upcoming tour. One last question.
Okay.
If people want to get the best experience from England in 1819,
yeah,
what do they need to know?
Listening to us and reading the lyrics and then coming to a show with a little bit of background knowledge of what we're about and what our ideas are, and then just coming to a show ready to have a good time, I think, then they definitely will have a good time.
Seeing you all live is a big part of your magic, and I would really recommend that.
Definitely.
All right. Well, thanks again, Andrew.
Thank you, man.
And best of wishes.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. That's our show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed interviewing Andrew. As you all probably guessed, we did this interview right before the Ozymandias episode of Breaking Bad. What a great episode that was. But anyway, I know what happened at this point, so it's quite okay that Andrew didn't have insights. After the interview, Andrew sent me a message just wanting to clarify some of his comments. He is more than open to talking to anyone at the show before a set, after a set, whatever. And I can vouch for that. Andrew and Dan are really friendly guys, very approachable. I am grateful to Andrew for his honesty. I think his point was just about being considerate, right? Doing creative work is tough, and trying to make a living from it is even tougher. I can tell you from personal experience, it is discouraging, demoralizing even, to put your heart into a project, to really fight for something that you believe in, that means a lot to you. And then not only are you unable to make a profit from it, but then you lose money, sometimes a substantial amount of money. That takes its toll. So again, just be considerate, be mindful. These guys are trying to do something memorable for us. They are giving us an experience. They're sharing something personal with us. So just show some appreciation. And I don't think it's asking a lot to just say, hey, I'll say hello, but I don't want to monopolize these guys' time. I know there are lots of other fans that want to say hello. So yeah, just be considerate. For those of you all who will be in New Orleans this upcoming Saturday, September 28th, you can go to the release party for the new album. That's going to be at a place called Gasa Gasa. It's on 4920 Freret Street in New Orleans, and they actually have a Facebook page for that, so you can check it out. Look for the details in the show notes. I am going to include some links where you can find out more about the band in the show notes, where you can check out their new album if you're so inclined. I am hoping to have a website for this podcast up soon, but in the meantime, look for the details on the iTunes show description. Basically, when you're looking at the feed, if you just click on where it says more, it'll tell you. So there you are. There's that. For those of you who are interested, I will also include a link to a blog post I wrote about my adventures at South by Southwest. It's quite a story, I guess you could say. If you like the show, if you want to support us, would you take a moment, go to iTunes, click the rate button, give us a rating, leave a comment. It takes just a few seconds. And if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. It means a lot to hear that someone appreciates the show. And I've heard some feedback, so thank you for that. But please help us out and do that for us. It does also help us grow our audience. So thank you for that. If you have feedback for us, the email is podcast@ncivitis.com. I told you all, if you stick it out to the end, you will get to hear a full song from the new album. And I'm not going to let you down. You stuck around. You made it. I'm going to let you hear one of the songs. That's going to come right at the end. I am going to do the little closing music just because, you know, we can't throw out everything. So right after that, listen for the song from England in 1819's new album, Fireball Electric Tomorrow. The name of the track is called Daniel. And once again, a special thanks to Rob Coslow for providing the song True Gemini. On this podcast, you only hear a few seconds at the very end here, but still, we're very grateful. All right, folks, until next time, let's make our future collaborations be better collaborations.
Inside.